For WKU Public Radio, this is Dan Modlin. 150 years ago this month, a deadly Civil War battle took place in the state of Virginia. Union forces under the new leadership of Ambrose Burnside went up against the firmly entrenched Confederate troops led by Robert E. Lee at the Battle of Fredericksburg. Dr. Glenn LaFantasy of the WKU Institute for Civil War Studies says Burnside had been chosen by President Lincoln to replace General McClellan.
When you make a choice like that to replace McClellan with an officer already serving in the Army of the Potomac, and that officer, Ambrose E. Burnside, tells you directly, Mr. President, I am not qualified to command this army. I don't have the expertise to do it. That should tell you something, but it didn't to Lincoln. Lincoln insisted, and so Burnside very reluctantly took on the command. But to his credit, Burnside's widely criticized for his actions at Antietam, this event at Fredericksburg, later for his handling of the Department of the Ohio, dealing with copperheads there. So he gets a lot of criticism, but he was one of the most affable of people. His fellow officers enjoyed his company. Just a very likable fellow. And also, to his credit, he knew his own limitations. He knew he wasn't up for this job. He just didn't have the right stuff.
And Dr. LaFantasy says General Burnside had a lasting impact on American culture. He gave us the term sideburns.
He had these great mutton chop whiskers, and ultimately, as was the habit sometimes of soldiers, they turned it backwards and turned Burnside into sideburns.
WKU military historian Dr. Jack Thacker says Burnside organized his troops into three grand divisions.
He had come to the conclusion that the reason he failed at Antietam was he didn't have enough men. So now he's consolidated the army into three large bodies, one under Sumner, one under Franklin, and one under Hooker. And he is being pushed by Lincoln to move. And unlike McClellan, Burnside decides to move. And he moves very rapidly. What he's counting on doing is going to march down to Falmouth, Virginia, cross the Rappahannock, assault Confederate positions at Fredericksburg, and get between Lee and Richmond. That's his whole point. But Burnside has a problem. He cannot, for the life of him, write a clear order. He leaves Halleck, who is chief of staff, in the dark about what's going on. He doesn't really understand, and so Halleck doesn't supply the pontoon bridges that he needs to cross the Rappahannock. Burnside gets the jump on Lee completely. I mean, here's an army moving fast, about 110,000 men, moving very rapidly, and Lee's not used to that. He's used to McClellan. Suddenly, on November the 17th, there is Burnside at Falmouth, ready to cross over and take Fredericksburg, and Lee is scrambling. But fall rains have come, the river is overflowing, and Burnside sits there and sits there and sits there. Lee is able to bring together 75,000 men occupying the St. Mary's Heights there at Fredericksburg, brings in Jackson from the valley to cover his right flank further down, a place called Prospect Hill. Nothing happens until the 8th of December when they finally get the pontoon bridges there and they begin to build them across the river.
Dr. LaFantasy says Burnside's orders were ambiguous and resulted in pontoons being sent to the wrong place.
And it confused headquarters back in Washington, not only Halleck, but the engineers responsible for the pontoons.
And Dr. Thacker says when Union forces eventually did launch an attack, they met stiff resistance.
Burnside comes to this remarkable conclusion. He's going to surprise Lee. He figures Lee would never think he's going to attack across at that point now. So he builds his pontoon bridges. He also builds some 2 miles downstream where Jackson is dug in. Then on the 13th, he launches the attack. Now, he's told Franklin, who commands 50,000 men, told him to move against Jackson at the same time, so like a feint attack. And then whoever's successful, he'll reinforce. But 2 miles makes it impossible in times of battle to do so. It was an impossible thing. But again, the orders were very ambiguous. They're not clear-cut orders. He launches across the Rappahannock on the 13th. Confederates, it's like shooting fish in a barrel. The Confederates really destroy 14 brigades of the Union Army as they went up the hill. Franklin, on the other hand, has some success.
has a breakthrough there on the Confederate right flank, and a lot of that success is due to the skill of General George Gordon Meade, who will prove himself again later at Gettysburg in command of the whole army. Meade and his troops perform exceptionally well. However, there's just no way that their breakthrough, which does occur, that they can hold that break. And they're forced to retire. And they're facing Stonewall Jackson, after all, and his veteran troops. The tragedy and the sadness of this Battle of Fredericksburg has become famous for the part of it that takes place below Mary's Heights. That's where a portion of the National Park is today in Fredericksburg. Those heights are significant. The Confederates there also had an advantage in another sunken road. The firepower there, one historian, James McPherson, says it resembled a machine gun. Yeah. The Confederate fire was so steady and constant. They just mowed down wave after wave of Union troops.
Dr. Thacker says the loss of troops at Fredericksburg had a significant impact on the morale of the Army of the Potomac.
Even more so than Antietam. And because of the dead bodies stretched out across that hill, it was like an exercise in futility. And I think it contributed to desertion rate from the Army of the Potomac after the Battle of Fredericksburg.
Dr. LaFantasy says some Union forces known as the Irish Brigade never really recovered from the Battle of Fredericksburg.
Comprised of regiments from New York and one regiment from Pennsylvania of Irish boys, they gallantly made their charge against the Stonewall, failed, of course. But the failure there under their colonel, Thomas Marr, truly decimated the regiment. Though they participated in later battles and would be at Chancellorsville and Gettysburg, by the time after Gettysburg, there was really no more Irish Brigade. It's one of the most compelling stories about Fredericksburg, and it's one that a lot of people know through the movie Gods and Generals, but also anybody who goes and visits Fredericksburg can see where the Irish Brigade attacked, and it's just a heartfelt tragedy.
Dr. LaFantasy says Fredericksburg is also remembered as a place where it was difficult for many Union soldiers to leave the battlefield.
The shooting and the battle really didn't stop until after darkness had fallen on this winter night. In the sky, the aurora borealis was active. So the aurora borealis is flashing in the skies, but many of the living survivors of the Union attackers were still on the battlefield, huddled next in what became a freezing cold overnight, huddled next to their dead and wounded comrades. It was a horrible scene, eerie, grim. These soldiers, many of them, were afraid to move because afraid that Confederate snipers would pick them off. And indeed, the firing continued in a desultory way throughout the night. Some of those that survived could not get off the battlefield until a truce was called.
The Battle of Fredericksburg took place on December 13, 1862. This has been the latest in our series of reports on the 150th anniversary of the Civil War. For WKU Public Radio, this is Dan Modlin.